Thanks for listening to Olathe Wesleyan Church's online teaching. This week, Pastor Janetta continues our series, The Principles of Discipleship.
My name is Janetta Herrera, and I'm part of the teaching team here at Olathe Wesleyan. And I just had to tell you one little thing about this young couple that came in today. I want you to look over to this table. Embarrassing people is kind of like what I do. So look over to this table, and Kim McKnight, raise your hand. Kim McKnight happens to be the mother to Laura. And I go, Kim, the Youngs are here. And Kim goes, who? I thought that was pretty cool. But it's understandable since it's only been 4 weeks. We're really glad you're here. And thank you for letting me embarrass you. We've been in a series called The Principles of Discipleship. And this verse has been a verse that you have seen for several weeks. So hopefully by the time that we're all done, this is a verse that's going to be just embedded in your head and you will never, ever forget it. It goes like this. I have been given all authority in heaven and on earth. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Teach these new disciples to obey all the commands I have given you. And be sure of this. I am with you always, even to the end of the age. Okay, question. Who is talking? And to whom? Who's talking? Jesus. Say it like you really believe it. Who's talking?
Jesus.
Okay, and who is he talking to? Oh, I heard several things. Who's he talking to? Who said that? You are so good. He was talking to us. Or in other words, what we would call, well, let me ask you this next question. Who is the church? Who is the church? Us? Okay, so Jackson back there said that Jesus is talking to us, and we are the church, us. So Jesus is talking directly to us, his church. Is that a yes or a no?
Yes,
Jesus is talking directly to us. Therefore, what is the core task of us who say we are Christ's followers? What's the core task? Let's see if it's right. Ah, there you go. Our core task is to make disciples. Therefore, since that's our core task, we have been introducing you to several different concepts. The first one that we introduced you to was called the discipleship timeline. We have the pre-Christian, who was one that is not yet following Christ. We have the point of conversion, which is they come to realize that they need Jesus and they're making those steps to become more of a Christ follower. And we have the sanctification, which just means that you are continually growing in the grace of God. We then showed that timeline so that we could help to identify, one, where we are on it. As individuals, where would you place yourself? And then two, where would you place the people that are around you? Your family, your friends, your neighbors, your coworkers, and see that little arrow? That means how do we then help, once we've recognized that, how do we help people move to the right? Then we showed the five awakenings, or the five signs. Those were to help us to understand the questions that people ask, that we ask. There's got to be more. I wish I could start over. I can't do this on my own. God deeply loves me after all. Now this is living. So that as we listen and recognize the questions, we should turn that back to God as individuals when we're asking those questions and when we're talking to other people, but we don't always do that. But going back to God is where we should go. Then those five awakenings, those signs, were placed on the timeline. So that you could see, when you hear a conversation with somebody and they go, oh, there's got to be more than this. You're like, I get it. I should start talking about questions here. Or we say, oh, man, if only. Gilbert always says, Gilbert's my husband right down there. Gilbert always says, there's a whole lot of hurt in those two little words, if only. But if we pay attention to that, then we can go, oh, yeah, here's how I can move the conversation. Or here's where I am, and I can move. Those five things were placed on the timeline so that we could actually see where we are and where others are to help in the spiritual growth. We then showed you the house. I hope that this house becomes something that you forever keep in your brain as well. As we showed you this house, we explained that as this house represents us, the whole part of the house is a spiritual being. Not just the top of it, but everything that's encompassing us is part of a spiritual being. The emotional, the volitional, the moral, the rational, the relational, the physical, all of it. And what that said to us was that you cannot take a relationship with Jesus and put it into one little window. The relationship with Jesus encompasses everything about us. He cannot be compartmentalized. Okay, that's cool and that's scary because it means it requires much more of us when I can't compartmentalize Jesus. I think that's pretty neat though. We also saw that with our spiritual being, that sin came in and sin totally resulted in our being totally depraved people. Sin ate up all of those windows with us. All of them. Because we are all completely spiritual, sin did encompass all of that stuff. And it's all darkened, but we also told you that there is hope. And the hope is in the redemption of Christ. Now here's what's so cool. Is though sin took it all, your relationship with Jesus, knowing that it's not just a window, then can light up all of those windows again. So since sin totally deprives, your relationship with Jesus is totally redeeming. However, you don't want to stop at the first point. You want those windows of your life to get brighter and brighter and brighter. That's what we've been doing. This is a continual process as we grow and grow and grow in this understanding of who Jesus is as it encompasses our whole entire spiritual being. Got that? Don't ever forget these little pictures, okay? So I have a question for you, and I need you to participate back. So start thinking. What if you grew up on a desert island with nothing to read but the Gospels? That would be Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. That's it. What would those four books, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, tell you about Jesus? Think. Nothing but those. Oh, I started to hear. Where?
His birth.
Talked about his birth.
Death and resurrection.
Death and resurrection. What was that?
His ministry.
I heard something over here. His life. His teachings. Can you go any deeper? His love for us. Any more? What was that? His sacrifice for us. His salvation. Or our salvation. Our salvation through him. His discipleship. Oh, we'll stop with that one. There we go. You know, those four books, except for the birth of Christ and a time when he was about 12 years old, really those books only encompass 3 years. And those four books, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, could be read by us in basically a day and a half. So it's not a whole lot of stuff that's in those books, but there is a whole lot of truth to be gained from those four books, a whole lot of insight. So, here's the word again. So, if a Christ follower is one who does life as Christ did, so, if a Christ follower's main task is to make disciples, it therefore makes sense that we look at those books, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, to try to discover how Jesus did it. Doesn't it? How did Jesus make these disciples? Dr. Robert Coleman, in a book called Master Plan of Discipleship, outlined a pattern of principles that Jesus used to make disciples of his 12, just those 12 little people that were there with him. And he looked at how you could take those principles and you could apply them to our own life so that we then in turn could fulfill the mission of going and make disciples. Okay, so I'm listening to this and I read this and I'm going, yeah, but that was back then. And what Jesus did back then might not apply today because times have changed. Now, I've told you guys before, I have this cynical side to me that people say things and I always have this, yeah, but we'll see. And so I'm having that thought in my head as I'm reading through this stuff and listening to him. Yeah, we'll see. And then he made this comment. Times change, but principles stay the same. Any age, any culture. I love that. Times change, but principles stay the same. Any age. That means whether you're 2 or you're 102. Any culture, whether you're in Johnson County or whether you live in Kenya. Principles stay the same. Therefore, I would like to look at some principles from Jesus' life and see how they can apply to us. First principle was, as we look at those four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, is Jesus became a servant. This is foundational to all discipleship, is to recognize the incarnation of Jesus. And I go, incarnation. Okay, I'm not this big wordsmith person, and I have to think, okay, what does incarnation mean? Here's what it meant to me. It means that Jesus, who was holy God, fully God, Son of God, came to earth as a human, in human form, with godly things within him, fully God, fully human at the same time, for the purpose of bringing us back to him, redeeming us. Do you remember the house? Do you remember when it was all black? And what it was is Jesus redeeming that sinful part of us. I think that's really neat. You know how Jesus did that? He met the needs, the felt needs of people. He served them. He fed thousands. Thousands. He defended women. So don't ever, as women, think that Christianity hasn't set us free. It most certainly has. God raised the elevation of women to a status that was equal to all. Jesus did that for us in a culture that was against it. Jesus defended the poor and the weak. Jesus healed. Jesus gave acceptance for what the others had put as outcast. Whatever it was, whether it was for their lifestyle or their disease, Jesus accepted them. This is called just-in-time discipleship. Just-in-time. Serving people is our opportunity to disciple. So I got a question for you. What are the needs of those in your family, of those in your neighborhood, of those in your friendship group, and of those you work with? What are their needs? You see, if you don't even know what the needs are, you don't know how to connect them to your Jesus. You start with that. It was foundational to serving. Second thing that Jesus did was he looked for people to disciple. He looked for people to disciple. In the Gospel of John, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, like I told you, in the Gospel of John, Jesus goes to John the Baptist to be baptized. Now, John the Baptist at that time had started the largest religious revival of all times at that very time. Jesus, with all of his power, goes to John to be baptized and then does not ask to be a part of the already massive ministry. Instead, Jesus walked and looked. And two people came up to him as he was walking after being baptized, and they asked Jesus a question. They said, "Where do you live?" And Jesus goes, "Hey, come and see." The two spent the day with Jesus as he talked with them and they ate together and he shared his life with them. One of them, by the name of Andrew, got very excited and left and went back to get his brother, who we call Peter, and said, "Peter, you got to come with me to hear this guy. It's amazing." Peter goes back. Peter's the one in the Bible who chopped off the ear, who denied Christ. Peter was kind of the one that caused lots of trouble. He had a mouth. And Peter gave a sermon that changed our world forever. You see what Jesus did in that principle? He looked for the receptive hearts. Do you remember the five awakenings? So that we can learn to see people, questions they are asking, and respond to their already receptive hearts. What are we to do? We are to begin where Jesus began. We are to do what Jesus did. With our family, with our friends, with our neighbors, with our coworkers. You ready for this? We were supposed to be praying that God laid somebody on our hearts. Well, that's good. I want you to know something. Whether you pray that prayer or not, you will never, never, ever, ever be in a spot where there isn't somebody to disciple. Now, we don't always respond to it, but we will never be in that spot. Your crowd, whether it is with your kids' soccer team, or whether it is at work, or whether it's in your neighborhood, your crowd is where you were to disciple. Your neighbors, your family, your friends, and your coworkers. The third one, Jesus associated with his disciples. In other words, he just spent time with them. This is just plain being together. That's all. It's so simple. It's just so simple. It's just spending time. Jesus brought those people, starting with those two, into his life. He fished with them. He walked with them. He ate with them. He spent time with them in his daily routine. So you are to bring people into your life. They will learn the ways of the Lord from you as you do life with them. You seek ways for casual fellowship. Aw, Alicia, what'd you guys do on Labor Day? Down in the catacombs? Down in the catacomb things? What'd you guys? Paintball. Whether you're doing, I couldn't think of that word, it's so simple. Whether it's paintball, whether it's going to a Starbucks, whether it's going to a Royals game, whether it's going to an M&U game, whether it's being out in your backyard, whether it's going golfing. Now, why anybody would go golfing except for the purpose of the Great Commission, I don't know. But even if it's golfing, you have to keep in mind that all these opportunities are for you to connect with people, and you're bringing them into your life for the purpose of discipling them. your family, your friends, your neighbors, and your co-workers. Jesus expected obedience. As people were coming in and Jesus was discipling them, he didn't just say, oh, that's just the way they are. You know, they'll always be this way. I don't know. Jesus expected people to change. Did you know what I tell teachers, like even in preschool? Kids will raise to the level of expectations. Guess what? So do we. And Jesus expected his disciples to make turns into obedience. And when they didn't, he called them on it. Remember that Peter I told you about? Do you know, like I told you, Peter had a mouth. And there were times that Jesus turned to Peter and just said, hey, Peter, don't talk that way. That's rude, crude, and socially unacceptable. Those were my words, not Jesus. But he did tell him not to talk that way. And he did say, Peter, you're Satan. Get behind me. Would you like to be called that? And then Jesus turned to Peter and said, but if you want to follow me, you got to take up your cross and come after me. My ways are more important than your ways. You got to be like I'm telling you. Jesus called his disciples on their behaviors when they were fighting over who was supposed to be the best and who was going to be the most important. And when they were jealous of each other, Jesus didn't just pretend he didn't hear it. He walked into the awkward situation and he said, uh-uh. And he switched it to being about things of God. One of the things I want you to know is that we never, ever should stop learning about the ways of Jesus. It's too deep and there's too much. Having said that, you will never, ever be at the point that you have learned enough so that you can disciple. Oh, did you hear that? That's not true. From the moment that you accept Jesus into your life, you are ready to disciple. You will never be at the spot. It's like people saying, I'll never have kids till we have enough money. You never have enough money. If we all waited for that, there'd be no kids. We'd have no little Herreras running all over the place because we certainly never had enough money. You don't do that with your discipleship either. So no more can anybody say, oh, I don't know enough. I'm too young in my faith. I struggle too much with my own stuff. That's the biggest cop-out ever. Won't go anymore. The only requirement to discipling somebody else is you love Jesus. And as you grow, you are helping others to grow and to come to know your Jesus. As you work with your family, your friends, your neighbors, and your co-workers, you must disciple. Jesus showed them how to minister to others. Jesus let his disciples do stuff right along with him. And as Jesus let his disciples be with them, they saw his priorities and his values. He taught them how to pray so that they in turn could teach others how to pray. And they saw how important it was. He taught them about compassion as they saw how Jesus was compassionate. There's this man in the Bible named Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus was this crappy old tax collector that nobody liked because they always made money off of collecting taxes. And so instead of $10, he required $50 and kept the rest and put it in his pocket. And Jesus was walking through a town and people were all around him. And this little tiny Zacchaeus, because it says he was little, wanted to see who this Jesus was. So he climbed up into the tree and he looked down and Jesus looked up to him and said, hey, you come here. I'm going to go to your house. Now, that might not be a big deal to you right now because you think, oh, I've heard that story before, or maybe you haven't heard that story before. But I want to tell you what's really cool about that story. Zacchaeus was an outcast and needed desperately to know that somebody saw him for who he was and loved him. Jesus did that. But let me tell you what else Jesus did at that moment. He showed all of his disciples what they were to do. They were to love those that everybody else cast out. And that nobody is beyond the grace of God. You know, that's what the disciples learned in that very moment of doing life with Jesus and seeing how Jesus ministered. Do your neighbors, friends, family, co-workers, do they see, or what do they see that matters to you? Do they see that what matters to you is sports? Do they see that what matters to you is having a good yard? Do they see that what matters to you is you fill in the blank? Or do they see something deeper? Do they see that what matters to you is Jesus? If we bring people in and they minister with us, they will see. They will see. Jesus gave his disciples something to do. He involved his disciples in ministry with him. Not to fill spots or to do the jobs that Jesus didn't want to do. Like, I'll take you and you can come and go with me and you do all the cooking so I can sit here and just talk. He brought them in to do stuff with him. I don't like to cook. If anybody's new, I don't like to do that. I like to sit and talk. So you bring people in and you look at what they are good at, what they like, and Jesus used reaching his disciples and sending them out to be a part of something that they enjoyed doing. Not to fill a spot, but to be a part of things with them. You know, if we practice this of bringing people in with us and opening the door for them to minister in areas that are theirs, then you will see a difference in your neighbors, your friends, your co-workers, and your family. It's part of it. Jesus held his disciples accountable. This is my favorite story in the Bible. Favorite story. Jesus had been crucified and risen, but not all the disciples had seen them. And Peter, remember Peter I was telling you about that Andrew brought? Peter was having a really hard time because Peter was the one that denied Christ and ran away. In fact, on that night when Jesus was crucified, and he had just spent 3 years with these disciples, these 12, one of them had turned him in to be killed. The other one had denied him publicly. The rest had run away except for one. One disciple stayed with Jesus during his darkest time. One out of 12. Those disciples didn't know what to do. Peter in particular had said, I think I'll just go back and go fishing. So Peter went out on the lake, fished all night, and got nothing. Early morning hours, sun's starting to come up, looks onto the shore and sees somebody there as they're rowing in. The person on the shore yells out, how was the fishing? Peter, nah, not so good. Well, throw your net on the other side. What are you, an idiot? I've fished all my life. I know what I'm doing. But did that and brought the fish in. Guess who was on the beach? Jesus. I love this story. Jesus looks at Peter, and Peter had just done all this crappy stuff to Jesus. And Jesus looks at Peter and says, hey, son. Come and eat what I prepared for you. Jesus let Peter make mistakes. Peter hurt him terribly. But Jesus did not give up on Peter. Jesus did that. Why do I let when somebody hurts me shut the door on me discipling anymore? Why would I expect anything less than that? Why? I love it. Jesus anticipated fruitfulness even from the Peters. when he was going to die or go up to heaven, he said, look, I give you my power here. I expect you to go out and multiply. And they did. Those disciples went out and impacted thousands. And their words have impacted millions through the centuries. Through the centuries. You know, real production comes when we disciple someone, and then they go and disciple others. And then they disciple others. It's kind of like how when you send your kids out, this is what the real joy is of sending your kids out. They do better than you ever could have done. That's really neat. It's really neat when you know that inside of you, you've got this desire to do this stuff in the world, and then you're old or things don't go that way, and circumstances change, but there's this desire, and all of a sudden you see your kids pick up that same thing and go. And they are so much better than you ever would have been. Ever. That's what discipleship does. When you pick up people and help them move, and then you instill in them what they're supposed to do, and they go out and are more effective than you ever could have been. That's fruitfulness. Jesus anticipated that his disciples were going to be fruitful. Jesus then gave them his spirit. At the last verse, when we read it at the very beginning, the end of that Matthew 28:20 said, and be sure of this, I am with you always, even to the end of the earth. What that means to us today in the principles is we better be praying for God to fill us with his power. Now notice the difference. Not to bring people around us, because that's already done, but to fill us with his power so we go out and quit being timid and bashful and making excuses so that we start discipling, which is our core task, if we love Jesus. If we love Jesus. If we love Jesus. There's no excuse. If we love Jesus, we have to be making disciples in our family, in our friendships, in our workplace, and in our neighborhoods. If we love Jesus. If we love Jesus. No excuse. So, how do we know we're making disciples of Jesus? How do we know we are modeling what Jesus did? Our answer is, we will be engaging those around us, and we will see ourselves growing, and we will see those that we are discipling growing as they become like this, humbly submitted. That means they've made that decision that was on that timeline that says, yep, I'm gonna love Jesus. They don't even know what it all means yet, but they've started. Then the next thing that comes from that is we will see that they are becoming biblically formed. You know what that means? That means that you are learning about Jesus and you are teaching others about Jesus. But here's the kicker. It's not teaching for the sake of just learning more junk. It's teaching for the learning these next things. As we teach about Jesus and as we live this way, we will become people that are relationally healthy. And relationally healthy leads us to an inclusive community. That's our core value of acceptance. And what that means is, as we are relationally healthy, we believe that nobody, just like Zacchaeus, is beyond the scope of God's grace. Nobody. No matter how many times they've hurt me. Nobody. Little sidebar, I have people that I wish were beyond that grace because they've hurt me badly. But as I become relationally healthy, I can't be there. Nobody is beyond God's grace. And they become sacrificially generous. You know what that means? That you will see us and them becoming intentionally generous. Intentionally blessing others. That means that we go beyond just giving the little 10% and the little tipping that we would do or the leftovers. It means that we will give sacrificially from our time, our resources, and our talents and expect nothing in return. I don't like that either. I like to give and expect that I'm going to get something back. I like to have people over and think, oh, they'll have me someday too. I like to work hard and know that you're going to notice. I like to share stuff and think, oh, there's going to be some feedback come to me. Oh, that's not what that means. It means that we will be sacrificially generous with all that we've got. In blessing others with nothing coming back. Third thing is that we will become morally discerning, and those that we disciple will see this, which means we become culturally engaged, not for the purpose of pounding on those cultures we don't agree with, but for the purpose of loving and accepting them to disciple them in the way of Jesus. You can't disciple if you're pounding. It's loving and guarding and moving people along. This man's name is Al Sparks. Al was a pilot. And as he was flying his little two-engine plane, it crashed. And he survived. But in that survival, he lost his hearing completely in one ear, and it wasn't so good in the other ear, and his legs was meshed up, and so then he began walking with a limp. He used to be a pretty robust construction worker, and he really understood those things. And it was like, okay, now I have all this on me, what do I do now? And decided that he was still going to just keep staying with his construction work, and he was the head of a site where they were building. And Al connected to his workers. The workers that he connected to weren't always nice back. I mean, he's deaf. Can you imagine what they would say about him behind his back? He didn't walk so well, and he would be slow. But Al shared Jesus with those people that he worked with. That was his co-workers, the people that were there. Over time, as Al was sharing on a regular basis, two people in particular were there, one named Tubbs and the other named Gilbert. Tubbs walked off. Actually, his name was Tubby, wasn't it? Tubby walked off, big dude, and Gilbert hung around. Even with all of the things that that brought, they weren't from the walk of life that we know. They might come in high. They might come in drunk. Al kept discipling. They might not always work a good day, but Al kept discipling. That discipleship that occurred changed my life, because that disciple person was Gilbert, who then I've seen Gilbert over time come right alongside people when they're working. Now, it doesn't take too much for you to know which one talks the most around here, right? But when you get Gilbert by himself and he's with these guys one-on-one, he's discipling them as he was discipled. So that they begin to imitate his behaviors as he follows Christ. what we're to do. No excuses. If we love Jesus. And I am so very thankful that Al didn't let his disabilities or the fact that the construction workers were rude stop him from disciplining Gilbert. We were in the office this week, Candy, me, and Ken. Candy Kalapa's over here. She's going to die that I pointed her out. Raise your hand. Raise your hand. There you go. I'm very bossy, too. And in the back is Pastor Ken, and we were there, and Ken says, you know, I have this quote you might want to use. And so I said, okay, what is it? He goes, lifestyle evangelism only works if your lifestyle is distinctly Christian. Otherwise, it's networking. And it's like, okay, that's nice. And then that led us to talking about discipleship. As we were talking, Candy, who was extremely shy, blurted out, this Christianity thing takes too much work. It requires so much. She got it. She's not going to back off from it, but she got it. Being a disciple maker for Jesus costs. Costs. It's a difficult thing to do because it costs. It will cost you your time. It will cost you your resources. It will cost you your emotional strength. It will cost you. So don't ever think that you are being asked to do something that's simple. You are being required to do something that is difficult. It costs you. It costs you. I have a challenge for you. First challenge is, read the Gospels. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Read them. See what Jesus did. My second challenge is, take those principles that he showed us. I challenge you to live it out just this week. I promise you, if you take the challenge, the rewards far outweigh the cost.
Write the word on the table of my heart as you have forgiven. Help me not to turn again. Hide it in the crevice of my heart so I won't depart. Teach me how to use it. Teach me how to use it for your glory. How to use it. Teach me how to use it, oh Lord. Thy word is a lamp to my feet. It guides me where a provider of strength helps me to grow and increase in faith. Oh Lord, I know your promises are true. For you said it in your word, and I believe it too. And you said not to give up on you. So all I wanna do is ask you, dear Lord, write the word on the table of my heart. As you have forgiven.
Thanks for listening to Olathe Wesleyan Church's online teaching. To learn more, visit olathewesleyan.org or visit us on Sunday morning for our 10:30 worship service. Thanks again for listening.